Hey there, thanks for pressing play on this AHDB podcast. So, bit of news. Food and farming and agronomics have officially been retired. No more episodes coming. But wait, before you wander off into the podcast wilderness, we've got something new, shiny and weekly. It's called The Ag Show. It's got all the good stuff. Farming chats, fresh insights and a whole load of fun. New episodes drop every Wednesday at midday. Just search The Ag Show wherever you get your podcasts to give it a whirl.
Well, it looks like it's a ladies special this week, plus Tom. Producer Alice is filling in for producer Martin. How's it feel?
So far, so good.
Yeah, that's right, Charlotte. We are joined by Emma from our RCI team and Becky from the livestock analysis team. So you are right. I am the honorary male invite to this, and I hope I'll offer something as well.
And I'm sure you'd look lovely in a dress too, Tom.
Who knows? Who knows?
We go in there.
Why not? I bet he's got better legs than all of us.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Hello, I'm Charlotte Fawkes-Reeves.
I'm Tom Spencer.
And I'm Hannah Clark.
And this is Agonomics, your weekly dose of analysis from the world of economics and agriculture.
This week, we'll be talking to two of our AHDB colleagues, Becky Smith, who will be taking us through the outlook for beef.
And Emma Wantling will be telling us all about beef demand, predictions and performance.
Yes, they'll both be helping us understand the current state of the beef market.
Giving us a steer, if you will.
Oh dear.
Oh, that's terrible, Tom.
I've eaten a lot of steak this week in the name of research.
Your dedication knows no bounds, Tom.
Very admirable.
Of course. We'll also be looking at a few top news stories and answering this week's big question.
Remember, new episodes drop at midday every Wednesday. So follow us wherever you listen to podcasts to make sure you don't miss a show. And do get in touch. Email us at agonomics@hdb.org.uk. Hello, team. Another Agonomics episode is upon us. How are we all doing?
Excellent. All the better for being here with you.
We've had some exciting staff news recently, haven't we, Charlotte?
Yeah, really exciting. So I think, actually, Emily, she was a little bit cagey with us, wasn't she, Tom, the other week when she was on, about the whole what's going on with the CEO recruitment process for HDB. Well, we had announced recently that we have had an interim CEO appointed. So seeing as this is a ladies' special this week, very fitting that we have got a female interim CEO, Janet Swadling, OBE. So from the 19th of August, she will be taking on the role while we have Graham, unfortunately, departing on the 22nd of August. So very exciting times here at HDB.
You mentioned Emily. I'm gutted. I was not able to join you guys when you spoke to her a couple of weeks ago. The episode sounded really good, though, when I listened back. How was it?
She was brilliant, wasn't she, Tom?
Yeah, she was fantastic. I thought she gave some really nuanced answers to some of the questions we posed her, even if we did sort of ask some tricky ones. But it was fascinating to see where she's come from in the world of agriculture before she stepped into her role as chair of HDB.
And I think very importantly, she did take on board my comments about making sure that within the interview process, they do ask about how they feel about buying ice creams for the HDB team. So that is a very important thing to get in there.
Talking about dairy, Tom, I think you've picked up something along those lines in the news this week.
Yes, we've had some interesting research done by Somya from our dairy team on global dairy supply trends. Some really interesting things in here. Dairy is predicted to remain the fastest growing livestock sector globally. However, the sort of drivers of growth will vary by region because there's different parts of the world producing at different speeds. But sort of top line that's coming from that, global milk production is forecast to grow by around 1.8% per year by 2034. And I know I went into the swimming pools filled of milk where that we produce in the UK, but I haven't done the math on this one because it is even larger. But 1,146 million metric tons is the going to be the supply in 2034 predicted. But the that's driven mainly by increase in milk yields per cow rather than necessarily the number of cows that are coming through. So some really interesting stuff. And if you do want to read that article, it is on our website, ahdb.org.uk, because, some really interesting stats that have come through from there. So thank you, Somya. Hannah, what have you got for us in the news this week?
Yeah, so on the theme of big analysis pieces, our colleague in the economics department, Amandeep Kaur Porewal, has released or has been in charge of releasing a huge piece of research on UK export prospects for red meat and dairy. So this is a massive piece of analysis that looks at the opportunities for the UK for trade across the globe. It's not the first time we've done this kind of research. We covered this kind of topic several years ago, but we have revised and updated this new set of analysis specifically looking at Europe to start with. There will be more coming down the line in future looking at other areas of the world. The EU is a massive market for the UK. We've traded with Europe for decades, and it takes around 83% of UK red meat and dairy exports by value, so it's huge. I'm not going to give too many spoilers away. The report is online, but we'll be speaking to Amandeep in more detail on the analysis and to really get the value out of the report in a few weeks' time on the podcast. So stay tuned for that one. But in the meantime, it is all on the website if you want to go and have a read.
I think I'm going to have to go and catch up on that. It does sound really interesting, especially with all the discussion we've had the last few weeks about how important trade's going to be for us going forward. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Can't wait to have her on the show.
And I think that draws us to the end of the news. And we will be back with our two guests after a quick break.
Welcome back. And remember, we have new episodes which drop every Wednesday at midday. So make sure to follow us wherever you listen to your podcast to make sure you don't miss a show. Now, I'm very much looking forward to our next guest. So we are joined by Becky Smith and Emma Wantling, and they're going to be taking us through what's the story with beef. And we all know, I mean, we've spoken about this several times on the show now, haven't we? It's been quite a challenging year, perhaps. So come on, what's the story, Becky? What do we need to know? What's going on in the world of beef?
Thanks for having me. So yeah, you're right. It's been a pretty dynamic time in the beef market. And I think really all eyes to see what's going to happen for the rest of the year. So yeah, as you said, we saw those really, really high prices in the first part of this year, really affecting slaughter levels and driving them up quite a lot. And we've seen those numbers kind of fall back in the last little while. So looking forward, I guess our headline figure is we're expecting a 4% fall in UK beef production for the full year of 2025. So that'll total 885,000 tonnes.
How does that then compare with previous years? Obviously, if we're down 4% on last year, are we seeing a decline on a decline, or did we have peaks? What's the story that we've seen previously?
Yeah, great question. So we saw really booming production last year, particularly in that second half of the year. We saw a real strong demand based back against kind of tighter supplies. We really saw that demand driving supplies up in 2024. If we look back historically, we're expecting 2025 to be a bit more in line with 23, but kind of historically low cattle numbers.
You mentioned tighter cattle numbers there, and that seems like it's been a phenomenon in the market for quite some time. I mean, we have fairly good sight of inventory data from the British Cattle Movement Service, don't we? And we see quite a lot of different trends in kind of the composition of the herd. So we've got dairy beef, but we've also got the suckler dynamic as well. Could you explain a bit more on kind of what we're seeing there in terms of those trends?
So yeah, you're right. We've seen this kind of long-term trend in decline in the beef herd, and particularly within the suckler herd. So we're seeing quite consistent declines in the suckler breeding herd, and that's really feeding through into suckler supplies. And we see that within the BCMS data and also within that DEFRA census data, kind of looking at those declines in breeding herd. We have also seen that increase in dairy beef. And I think that's a really interesting dynamic that we're seeing. So for the full year of 2024, dairy beef made up about 37% of total prime cattle supply. And looking at that registrations data and looking further forward, that's a trend that we're probably looking to see increase as we move forward. On that more kind of short-term view, so looking at registrations from British Cattle Movement Service for the first part of this year, we see those trends really continue. So we see kind of a continued decline in suckler calf registrations and a continued increase in that dairy beef calf registration. So again, starting to see that change in the mix for our forthcoming beef supply.
So that's, I guess, kind of the supply outlook and what we're seeing in terms of cattle numbers on the ground. What are we seeing on the trade side of things? Because obviously imports and exports are a really important part of the beef market. Ireland in particular is a key trade partner for us. What does our latest outlook kind of say on that sort of thing?
Yeah, so we've seen for the year so far that import demand into the UK slightly higher. I think that's really a reflection of our tighter supplies and our lower production levels. And so we have seen higher imports. Interestingly, you mentioned Ireland. Ireland actually not really a driver of that. So they're having kind of similar challenges with their own domestic supply, slightly constraining their export volumes. And we've seen that price differential between GB and Ireland close in recent months, making that import from Ireland slightly less appealing. What that does mean is we're seeing our other minority suppliers, places like Brazil and Australia, kind of filling in and increasing our imports there. And that's something that we probably expect to continue for the rest of the year. I think an important caveat to that is probably to recognise that Ireland is still our majority import supplier. And these smaller markets only make up about 10% of imports, but they are becoming kind of increasingly important. And we're expecting imports for the full year to sit at 6% above 2024. So yeah, quite a lot of growth on that import side to support production. On the export side, again, interesting dynamics and quite an influence of our domestic price. So we saw our domestic price very, very high at the beginning of this year, and that has weighed on export volumes. So our export volumes back about 9% for the first 5 months of the year versus last year. But interestingly, we are seeing that export value much higher, probably reflective of that kind of strong demand. Exports majority market still going to the EU, and the EU is delivering that export value back to us. For the full year, we're forecasting that our export volumes will stay lower, and so about 7% down versus 2024. Again, kind of reflective of our higher price and our lower domestic volumes limiting that ability to export.
And you talked about higher prices. I'm going to bring it back to the kind of domestic supply point, because I think that's a really fascinating piece to explore in the beef market, particularly at the moment. We've seen record high cattle prices so far this year, but very volatile as well. I mean, the question at the moment, I think, really is, at what point do you think the high prices that we're seeing in the market at the moment might start to switch that sentiment? And there's obviously a lot of things that impact the sentiment of a producer or finisher. What do you think about the position prices are in now, whether that might start to change producers' intentions around stocking levels?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's something that I think is a real topic of discussion within the industry at the moment. Kind of what does the medium term future look like, and how do we support that domestic supply and kind of encourage that domestic herd? I think, as you say, the prices have been really strong in recent months, which classically would be an indicator maybe to be retaining slightly more females and to be looking at kind of building back into the herd. I think the challenge is that when we take in the wider picture, and you started to talk about it, that kind of wider policy point, and like you said, the volatility in the price, that has really hampered producer confidence and producer sentiment. So at the moment, I think we're probably not seeing that kind of that reinvestment and that regrowth into the market because of the wider picture, despite where prices have been historically extremely high. I think in terms of how we'll see that going forward, obviously we've got a significantly long lead-in time into cattle. So from a change of sentiment to actually changing breeding practices, changing calves, actually getting calves on the ground, which is probably the first time that we would see that change in sentiment, we're looking at a fairly long lead-in before we can see that in data. It's something we're really keeping an eye on. So looking at that BCMS registrations data, and also in breeding herds, you know, are we seeing more female retention? Less females in slaughter might suggest that actually those females are being kept back to increase your breeding numbers. So yeah, we've talked around the houses there. I think probably to summarise, at the moment, that incentive to invest is probably being hampered by the wider picture and that uncertainty and that volatility. But it's something that we'll kind of continue to look for in the data and to see whether we do begin to see that kind of move into a rebuilding phase. But evidence on that at the moment is pretty limited, I would say.
Thank you, Becky. That was awesome, I think, in terms of where we're headed with that beef outlook for the year. Now, that will be very relevant to a lot of people who are within the supply chain of beef and farmers, producers themselves. But particularly on the consumer side of things, there's also lots to talk about. Isn't that right, Emma?
Yes, thanks, Tom, and thanks for having me. So if we look back to 2024, we had a bit of a flat performance in terms of demand for beef. And so at the start of the year, when we did our January outlooks, we were predicting a little bit of a return to growth, and so a plus 1% growth. However, as we've heard from Becky, we've had constraints in supply, and we've seen that leading to higher prices on shelf for consumers, and that's had a knock-on effect on volumes. So we have modified our forecast, and we're now looking at a minus 2% decline in total beef for 2025.
I think it's definitely something that all of us have probably noticed when we've gone shopping. Prices on shelves have been higher, and it does feel like beef has probably been impacted by this a little bit more than perhaps some of the other proteins, or at least I've noticed it. What are we thinking then? Is it the same picture for retail and for food service, or is there a change? You know, is one performing better than the other?
So if we think about retail for the second quarter of this year, prices have increased 11% for total beef. So huge price increases. And that's led to a big decline in volumes, so minus 4% in volumes. And we're seeing consumers reacting in different ways. So some consumers are spending less on the cuts that they'd normally buy. So, for example, if they'd normally buy a 750-gram pack of mince, they might have dropped down to a 500-gram pack. Some consumers are stopping to buy less cuts. So they might in the past have bought steak and a roasting joist and mince, and now they're just focusing down onto mince. And then there are some consumers who are dropping out of beef altogether. So they're switching down to cheaper proteins. So things like chicken and pork are being advantaged. So that's the picture in retail. And in food service, again, we see volumes are subdued, mainly coming through from takeaways. So dine-in is still looking in a reasonable state. So people are still wanting to go out and have that special treat and that special occasion. And beef is playing a part there. But overall, it is also seeing some struggle from a demand side.
I'm sensing a little bit of pessimism possibly in the outlook for beef demand for the rest of the year. What are the opportunities that the sector could kind of capitalise on to make sure we're really keeping that beef in front of consumers and driving that demand?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's about keeping beef top in mind for consumers. So from a retail perspective, thinking about how we can make beef available and affordable for our consumers. So can we look at different pack sizes, different qualities? So making it accessible for consumers, irrespective of what budget they have to spend. But it's also about encouraging consumers to think about beef as a really tasty, versatile option for their meal planning. What's family friendly? What's filling? How can they use things like batch cooking to make sure they're reducing the amount of waste from the product they bought? And of course, beef is a wonderful, tasty, nutritional product. So how can we communicate those benefits to consumers? And that's one thing that the HDB Let's Eat Balanced campaign brings to life for our consumers.
I have to say, beef would be definitely a favourite within our household. So we completely buy into all the messages that we kind of put through with the Let's Eat Balanced. And yeah, I think my husband would be rather grumpy if we didn't have beef in the fridge. But it is that, you know, recognising that we probably have had to change what we're buying just because price is influential within it.
So what's particularly interesting about some of these outlooks is we do sort of revise our figures potentially when we've sort of seen what's happened in the first part of the year. Becky, have you seen any sort of large scale, well, large scale might not be the right word, but any changes that we've seen that are particularly significant in any of the data you've been looking at?
Yeah, you're right. So kind of as the year progresses and we see that data come in, obviously we take that into account and we often see that make some changes to the forecast and we kind of readjust our expectations. I think the example in this cattle forecast has been looking at those cull-cow numbers, and we've seen cull-cow slaughter much lower year on year for the first part of 2025, but also lower than we'd expected. So we've seen slaughter rates lower than historic and lower than we'd expected. What that's meant is we've had a lower number of cows coming forward. So we've adjusted our forecast and we're now expecting a 5% drop year on year for the full year of 2025. We look into what's driving that. Obviously, this cow slaughter is made up of both dairy cull cows and of suckler cows coming out of the beef herd. And we historically see dairy cows make up a slightly higher proportion, which has continued. So that cull cow slaughter is made up of both dairy cull cows and suckler cows coming out of that beef herd. Dairy cull cows make up a slightly higher proportion of our total cow slaughter, and actually have been quite influential in the first few months of the year in decreasing that cow slaughter headage. A few reasons for that, really. We've seen the dairy market fairly strong, so we've seen quite consistent milk prices and a pretty strong milk to feed price ratio. So that's that the cost of feeding dairy cows versus the value of the output has been favourable. And what that's meant is we've seen a higher level of retention within the dairy herd. So we've seen people holding on to cows and fewer going through to slaughter. The impact of that then on our beef herd or on our beef supply is that we see a much smaller cow supply and that kind of building into that tightness in cow supplies. And we expect that will probably continue for the rest of the year, again, which will be influencing that total production number.
And I guess that tightness in supply is going to be what's keeping prices quite buoyant then.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen the cow price track quite similarly to the prime price. But interestingly, the kind of fall off of that peak for cow prices was much less severe than we saw in prime. And I think you're right, that's totally underpinned by that supply tightness. I mean, obviously the demand side also has an influence, but we're seeing that supply side really, really influencing the cow price.
So Emma, we've seen that obviously, and we've mentioned that price has been, what did you say, 11% increase in the last quarter for beef pricing. At some point that is going to be filtering through to the consumer and they might be then second guessing their purchases.
Absolutely. Together with Quality Meats Scotland, we've been doing a piece of new research working with World Panel by Numerator UK, looking at modelling what happens if beef prices continue to rise and what's the impact on consumer behaviour and what's the ultimate impact on volumes. So that analysis is coming soon and hopefully I can come back and chat to you all about that in another episode.
Yeah, I think that would be really interesting to our listeners. And it's certainly something that we're interested in because it's been a topic which we've discussed several times about, cool, what's going on now with beef?
Yes, how much is my steak going to cost at the supermarket? And will I be the one affected and going to make more of a cottage pie instead?
I think it's time for a quick break after all that beef chat, don't you?
Go and make myself a steak.
if you're quick. That's right. We'll be back with the big question after a short interlude.
Welcome back to the Agonomics podcast. We've now come to the point in the show where we have the questions posed to us that you were too afraid to ask. Alice, what have we got this week?
This week's question asker would like to know why abattoir numbers are falling.
Just a light topic then. You can see why it was anonymous, eh, guys?
So that is a really interesting and poignant question. It's quite a sensitive topic, I would say. We have seen the number of abattoirs in the country fall for quite some time. There's various reasons why that has happened. Consolidation in the sector has been ongoing for a while. Livestock numbers as well have been reducing. We heard that today from Becky talking about cattle supply. We've also seen it in the number of breeding sheep in the country as well. So all that consolidation of supply has an impact on the processing capacity of these abattoirs and the critical mass that is able to go through and be processed.
I suppose we also saw the issues that COVID and Brexit brought around with getting in the skilled workers for processing at these abattoirs. And if you don't have the bodies there to do the processing, obviously you can't have the livestock going through. So that is going to be putting that pressure and that tightness on those abattoirs and whether they can be viable and whether they can process what they need to be doing.
Yeah, that's right. These costs are rising. Margins are tighter and is becoming harder and harder for a smaller plant to sort of spread those costs. Unlike the bigger, more consolidated abattoirs, those ones sort of who are able to sort of invest in automation, integration, pushing for sort of uniform batches and sort of tightening up that supply chain, that they're the businesses that have been sort of more suitably situated in being able to sort of react to these changes that we've seen over the past 5 years or so.
Definitely. And I think this topic is something that we will be looking at in more detail going forward. The whole discussion around critical mass of livestock, around domestic processing capacity in the UK, is something that is so important for the industry, not only for production, but also food security, self-sufficiency more widely. It's massively important, because if you don't have that really important middle sector of processing, you don't have production. Farmers need processors as much as processors need the supply coming off farm. So watching this and producing analysis on this where we can will be super important to bring that evidence into what's happening in the sector. But we shall pause it there without too many spoilers, because our colleague Annabel Twinborough has written a piece looking at this very topic in detail. And I think it would be an excellent opportunity to get her on the pod to talk about this in more detail.
100%. I know, having spoken to her recently, there's lots of really interesting stats that she's been able to delve into about sort of the numbers of abattoirs there are, what that trend has been looking like, and potentially those sort of detailed reasonings behind what's happening and what might be next for the sector.
We'll make sure we get her on the pod then, I think, in the next couple of weeks, get her to talk us through everything. So while we might not have actually answered this question for you, we will be getting an answer in a later episode. So listen in a couple of weeks' time.
Well, I think we've just about come to the end of our episode. Thank you so much to Becky, to Emma, for telling us their thoughts on what's going to happen in the beef market for the rest of the year. A fascinating sector. Thank you, Charlotte. Thank you, Tom. We've had some fascinating discussion today.
How was it being one of the ladies, Tom?
Oh, I think you tell me. I think I've held my own.
You fit in well, don't you worry.
Thank you. And don't forget, episodes drop Wednesdays at midday. Be there, be square.
Join us in this nerdy community of agronomics. If you've got a question you've always wanted to ask, please do get in touch. Or if you've got a topic you'd like us to chat about on the pod, you can drop us an email at agronomics@ahdb.org.uk. And don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Speak to you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.